Well, good morning. As Rudy said, I'm a producer, so I'm no expert. All the experts are sitting out on the tables in front of me, so I hope what I have to share with you today is some exciting things in irrigation that wasn't available to a bunch of us 3 or 4 years ago, and I think they show promise, and hopefully that we can still continue to grow what we're growing with less water, or even more with less water. I started working with the TAWC in 2012 in two different sites. Site 50 was a 120-acre eight-tower pivot with one irrigation well rated at 300 gallons per minute, a 48-acre drip field with one irrigation well at 150. This past year, we started working on another site, working with two identical 68-acre pivots, sharing the same water with two wells, but we were looking at 40-inch drops on one pivot and 80-inch drops on another pivot. Both of these pivots have a tremendous amount of slope on them, and at least 10 foot. And so I had difficulty in those slopy grounds of getting production. And so I upgraded the pivot that has the 40-inch drops, and we put a Zomatic on there. And I was approached by Ferris Hightower to help alleviate some of this problem. We'll go to 40-inch drops so that we can slow the pivot down enough to get the water to get into the root zone. And it didn't take much arm twisting for him to convince me to do so. And all sites are located in Crosby County. There's 450 gallons. So there's 138 acres total with 450, but we just go from one pivot to the other. One of the goals is to find ways to be more efficient with irrigation water and producing more with less. Over the years, many technology devices have been bolted on my pivots and drip, compared and studied by the Texas Tech and the TAWC. Some have worked, some did not. Some showed promise, some were too costly, and some were outdated within a short time, and some had no support or service. So when we were approached to do this, we know that there's other equipment out there that does the same thing. So I'm going to be talking about Crop Matrix, Lindsay FieldNet, but there's other products out there that do the same thing. It doesn't matter what equipment it is, as this next slide will show. There's more than one product that do the same thing. And please do not ask any questions on that slide because my wife is in the audience. In 2017, I was approached by TAWC staff to look at advantages of VRI, or variable rate irrigation. There again, it didn't take long to convince me because I'd had this in the back of my mind. And what I'm going to share with you today is just some of the simple things, and I'm going to leave the final data for the Water College when we can actually bring you yield data and whatnot. But a system was installed on the pivot that would handle such tasks. It also was fitted with a digital flow meter and pressure switch so we could monitor all this either by a smartphone or a desktop computer. The system installed was a field net by Lindsay Zomatic. And out of all the mechanisms that bolted onto that pivot, this one here I do support, and I feel like that it's a product that has more advantages for us to see in the future. Also, we installed a Crop Matrix subsurface moisture monitoring probes so that we could evaluate the results between the VRI rates and the flat rate. And we had assistance from the TAWC personnel, Forefront Agronomy Jeff Miller, and in the Lindsay Corporation Ferris Hightower. The first and second year show some increase in VRI sections over the flat rate seasons. This will be our third year that we've been in this study on the first pivot. The first year we had drought conditions and we suffered some hail. So, you know, I feel like in some aspects that data is distorted because of weather conditions, but we have weather conditions every year, so it's still adequate information. Hopefully we'll have this year's data if Mother Nature cooperates with us, and we'll have that information available to you at the Water College in Lubbock on the 23rd. After the 2017 crop, I personally saw potential in VRI irrigation, and I put field net controllers on about half of my pivots for 2018, and in 2019, I put them all on the remainder, so all of my pivots have a field net controller on them. Now let's look at some of the small, simple VRI techniques that I use on my pivots. One of the nice things about this is you have 24/7 monitoring that gets to your phone. And I think this is a big plus because, you know, things break down 24/7 as well. Normally, prior to this, me or an employee would drive around in the mornings, check all of our pivots, drive around in the evenings. And most of the time, it always seems like the last one we get to is the one that had trouble. This way, I can wake up in the morning, look at my cell phone, and see where I need to go to first. And sometimes I get notifications during the night, and I have gotten up in the middle of the night and gone and checked on this. But as you can see in this first example, at 9:12 p.m., we were running, and then all of a sudden we stopped the pivot because we had low pressure. We had got down to 4 psi, so I assumed the well had died, the internal combustion engine. But as I drove up, the motor was still running, but it was missing. And it was simple that we lost pressure. We were stopping that pivot because I had one spark plug that fouled out. I changed that spark plug. We ran back up. So you can see from 9:12, we were up and running in about 12 minutes, 9:24. And if I hadn't had that alert, it would have run that way all night, either overwatering or could have damaged some other irrigation systems. Here's another one. This happened on a Sunday afternoon at 6:59. The pivot stopped. It had an alignment fault. We went out there and investigated, and you can see here it was still pressured up, but we had a drive shaft puck that fell off. We went out there, and within a matter of about 30 minutes, we changed it. We were up and running again. If we hadn't had this technology to tell us that there was something wrong, it would have sat there in that spot all night long. And I know some of y'all have other technologies that send you messages, and I think it's a great deal. But if we want to be more efficient with our water, I think we need to have such devices on our machines. From that, this is just a normal dashboard. Every morning I can look, or any time on my phone. It'll give me the rate that we're going, the depth that we're putting in, the pressure of the system, and then the gallons flow. And then from that screen, if I need to investigate anything further, I can go deeper into the app and find other problems. Now here is one of our fields, and I apologize, you cannot see, but you can see the darker colors here. This field here on the bottom half is what we call our variable rate irrigation, and we're trying to put a flat rate up here of what a pivot would normally be doing without VRI. Jeff Miller looked at this and is giving my prescriptions, and we look at the slope of the land. It's had some surveys, soil types and things goes into his recommendation. But if you see here, in some places we're not changing it up that much, but the first 2 years we have seen some yield increase in the VRI side over the flat rate side. Now we're wasting water in lots of places, but one of my pet peeves is turn rows. And years ago, it always seemed like that every time I needed to go down to the center of that pivot, there'd be water on that turn row. So I fixed this little study up, and that pivot right there is putting out an inch as it crosses that turn row. And to me, that is a waste. As you'll see over here, it's a double turn row, and I have it programmed to cross that turn row at 100%. So we're putting out an inch here. Here we're putting out 100%. So we're just crossing that turn row. So for the simple things on all my pivots, when I get to a turn row, a terrace, or something that's in a straight line with that pivot, I go across them at 100%. I don't want to waste my water in the turn row. I want to put it out in the field. Here is another, this is one of the pivots that has the slope. We have a tremendous slope right here and here and a small one here. And like I say, approximately from the lowest point to the highest point, there's probably 10 foot. And how we kind of set up a prescription for here is this is the first year with the field net on it. And every year, this low spot right here, I usually later in the season get that pivot stuck because all the water's running off that slope. It'll pile up in that turn row and I get there and it gives me issues. I put a field net on here this year and I never had that pivot get stuck because we're actually slowing the water down over here in the flat where it's good and where the slope where it's going to run off and gets down there, we're speeding it up. Our yield potential is not as good on the slope anyway because of the soil types and the slope. I can't hand water. But then afterwards, we start slowing it down so that I don't have that water to pile up here, and then I still go 100% over this little ravine right here. And so that's good for me to show that once that pivot doesn't get stuck during the season, I can control that and get water back up where I want. Also this year, and I really enjoy this, is we have the capability right here to turn on and turn off our accessory or our injection pump. And by doing so, the first two or three rotations, I was able to put out nitrogen all over the pivot. And then as I've got what I wanted to apply it up here, I started turning it on here and on here where the slope is. Hopefully if I could put out a little more nitrogen, I would get a tall enough plant on that slope that it'd actually be easier to go through the machine. So to increase production, I think if we can use a variable rate fertilization in those spots to increase it and maybe decrease where we don't need, that's going to be a cost savings and maybe increase our production. And then here we are again on a couple of other pivots. Here's my turn rows again. Now this was done early and I had to adjust this one because I had my degrees a little off and it started stressing some cotton too far out in the field. So I came back in here and adjusted that. Here's another pivot right here that has a tremendous slope right here. And I have had this pivot get stuck where the water pools from both directions. And then after a big storm, I always have water runoff here. So that's been a big spot. And since I have put the field net on here and been able to control the speed and location of where my hard places for it to cross, I haven't had this pivot get stuck either. And also, you can see here that we're turning on and off the fertilizer in different places, trying to hopefully add more production in the areas that we do not. Other areas right in here where the water stands and it's better soils, we're usually having to pix that area. So we're trying not to fertilize as much in that area as we are in other areas that we might be able to increase our production. And then here's just the same photo, just a little bit bigger so you don't have that stretch distortion in the picture. Now this is something that we have looked at once or twice, and this is probably something that I want to look into more because it's showing promising on these pivots. The main thing I want to point out here is these two pivots here are the ones, this one here is the one with the 40-inch drops, and this is the one with the, 40, and this one here have the 80-inch drops. And you can see here in where the slope is that we're not getting good enough water or being able to get water to get down into that root zone. And here we're doing a better job with the 40-inch drops. And I think that having the 40-inch drops, we're able to slow the pivot down to get it to get into the root zone before we start having runoff because we're spreading the water over a bigger area. It's where it is with the 80-inch drops, the water starts running down the hill, causing our problems here with the pivots getting stuck. But I think this aerial image shows us that the 40-inch drops is serving their purposes. And here's a picture. We're about midway of the slope, so you can see how much slope, and this continues on sloping down here. But here's a picture with a 40-inch drop, so there's a drop in every furrow. But if you'll look at this right here, That is a little shorter, you can tell. And in this next picture, here's why. Because in that pivot track, we don't have a drop. So you can see that the amount of water that we're putting is just on one side of these plants versus here. So there again, I think the 40-inch drops is showing me that we have done something to hopefully increase or be more efficient with our water with that in there. I don't have a picture of the one with the 80-inch drop. I wish that I got them, but I didn't. But I think this shows a good comparison that the 40-inch drops versus the one that didn't is something that we need to look into. In 2011, you know, that was a drought year. None of my pivots have reversers or able to water half of circles or anything. And with the field net, I can put up virtual barriers. And 2018 being a drought year too, I was able to plant one side, water it up, and then go to the other side. Whereas in 2011, we planted the whole pivot, tried to water the whole thing, and didn't get a crop up because of the low humidity and no rainfall. We were just basically a humidifier, but I've seen much better results in doing half and half, but having the equipment to give me the necessary needs to do that is a big plus. Here again, just in water savings, there is a tremendous slope right here, the turn row here. And in past years, I'd have water coming down this turn row, runs all the way down to here, because I couldn't control it. Ever since I put a field net on here, I've been able to get to these spots here. I've only got X amount of water. I need to put the water where my production is going to be the most. And this last year, I got water to pool right in here, but I never did get it to run down. So there again, I'm saving water, saving my resources in part of the field that shows me promise. Soil moisture probes, we're using the COP Matrix from Jeff Miller Forefront Agronomy. And here are the two pivots that we were comparing, the east one with the 80-inch drops and here with the 40-inch drops. And currently when this was taken, we were in the optimal. And my next slide will show you on the west where we had this irrigation. We came back down. As it come back around, we increased it. We got it almost to the full range. And then right here, we started coming down. And what happened is we went to the east pivot. So during this time here, we got a little below and needed to get back in refill. After it turned around on the east pivot, we came back up and almost got back up, and then now here was about shut off and coming down. And these are good tools to let you know, hopefully, that how much soil moisture you got in your field so that you can either keep watering into September, which we don't normally do, but on years like this year, we did get into September on some of them. Now I want to switch gears. Rick wanted me to talk a little bit about sustainability. This is a word that we probably didn't know really what meant 4 or 5 years ago, and today I don't think we really know what the word means. The word most likely has as many definitions as there are people in this room. Sustainability definition, according to Google, are as follows. The ability to be maintained at a certain rate or level. And the second, avoidance of the depletion of a natural resource in order to maintain an ecological balance. Now, somewhere in this definition, for me as a cotton farmer, you personally, my option two should also be economical and profitable. If I'm spending money to make a crop and I'm not being profitable, therefore I'm defeating the purpose of me growing the crop. This is a key and important issue to the cotton industry, the farmer, because sustainability is what the brands, the retailers, and consumers in today's public are wanting. They want their cotton to come from a sustainable industry. I think U.S. cotton farmers are doing that. I think the industry just wants to be reassured that we're doing that. So out of this comes the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. It's mainly driven by the National Cotton Council in association with Cotton Incorporated and Cotton Board. I currently represent you on the Cotton Incorporated Board. And also the folks from the SEAM have developed this program so that we can show the retailers and our customers that we are a sustainably grown crop. Two questions to answer. What is the protocol and why do we need it? The protocol, Trust Protocol, is a voluntary farm level program designed to engage growers in continuous improvement, a program that can help the industry reach its 2025 goals, and a system that will provide accurate data that can be passed through the textile supply chain, which includes producers, merchants, manufacturers, brands, and retailers. The requirements from the producer is to complete a self-assessment questionnaire, which I will briefly go over here in a moment, the use of data tools, farming operation profile. You have to have a list of your gens in the system, and a verification by independent party, and at this time I don't know who that independent party is. I'm sure that has been worked out, but I do not know. There are 9 categories that the questionnaire asks. There's approximately 100 questions. In those, there's some on soil health, nutrition management, water management, crop protection, harvest preparation, wildlife habitat, fiber and quality traceability, farm management, and worker relations. And most of the questions that you have to ask are, I do this now on my operation, I'm implementing on one or more of my fields, I will consider doing this on my fields in the next 3 years, or it's not appropriate for my farming operation. Now here are some of the industry goals. In the categories here of soil health, nutrition management, water management, crop protection, harvest, and wildlife, I guess the committee that got together, they wanted to have a 13% reduce of land, and we're getting that just about every year because of urban sprawl and other lands that's taken out of production. We want to be better irrigators, be more efficient with our water. We want to reduce greenhouse gases by 39%, reduce energy by 15%, and reduce soil loss by 50%, whether being smarter, either growing cover crops or whatnot in your mix. And then we want to increase carbon by 30%. Workers' relations, provide a safe workplace for all employees and ensure fair treatment. The questions on this mainly come from FIFRA. And the right to know that we are all familiar with in applying chemicals and pesticides. Farm management, and then fiber quality, the traceability. You know, the end users, being the retailers and the marketers, they're wanting that traceability. And to the extreme, we've had that with the bale tag for many, many years, but they want a tighter network of that. But yet again, I think this. To assure the retailers that we are a substantially grown crop is what they're looking at overall. To meet the needs of our customers, this gentleman here, Paul Magel, president of the Business Application and Technology Outsourcing Division of CGE, a software company that works with retailers and clients, says the needs of customers will vary. Many brands and retailers accept U.S. cotton as sustainable or responsibly produced. However, not all have done so. The point to the lack of standard or independent verification, and we must be flexible in the ability to pass data to the textile supply chain. The protocol is not about one grower or one bale being more sustainable than the other or guaranteeing a premium. The protocol is about U.S. cotton competing in every market in every supply chain. The United States can't afford to lose market access because of lack of sustainability. So we know the effects of lost markets. The U.S. cotton understands the importance of market access, and all cotton producers feel the impact of barriers to entering a market. Now here's the website for the producers that want to go and sign up. Once again, I want to say that it's voluntary. It will not be for all producers. There is some bookkeeping requirements into the program. I do see a few farmers in here, I think, have signed up. I signed up in August at the Cotton Incorporated meeting. But if you want to. It is very simple and easy. You just have to have your EIN number for your operation or Social Security number, the GINs that you work through, and then go through and answer the questions. Now, some of the questions, if you don't understand those questions, there is a spot over to the right-hand side that you can check on that gives a little more explanation of the question and then why they're being asked. But once again, it is voluntary, basically to help for the industry. And with that, I will entertain any questions that you have and possibly that I might can answer. Well, it would vary. What I found that to keep my pivots from getting stuck in those low places, I would speed up the pivot so that I would basically run through so that it was going the same speed all over the pivot. What I was not doing at the time by doing that is I wasn't getting the water deep down in my soil moistures. You know, we ran that around several times and my soil moistures wasn't showing that I was irrigating. My water was running into tracks or somewhere else, going down the hill and just strictly runoff. It wasn't getting into the root zone. So you try to slow that 80-inch pivot down, well, then that made the problem worse. And I've done this flat with cover crops. I've done it with rows. In some places where I basically stay flat now, because if I get an intense rain like I did on May 23rd with 7 inches and have furrows out there, I've had gully washers created, and so that cost me more problems. So what I have found that I'm applying the same amount of water with the 40-inch drops on that slope, but I'm able to slow that pivot down and percolate it into the ground in the root zone before it does have that chance to run off. Same amount of water, I'm just spreading it over more area. Now, does it cause me trouble? Yes, if I have to get into the field right quick to put up an application or something. I do have tractor tracks that could be affected by, being wet. But it's really not an issue because of me going back and forth to each pivot, so I do have 2 or 3 days that I can catch up, just dry enough to get a tractor track to either a spray rig or something to go through there. I think it's helped me to the point that I hope that I can go ahead and put the remaining drops and re-nozzle that other pivot. Well, on the variable rate, it's anywhere from 8 tenths to 1 1/4 inches. And if I was to put that on the 80, especially where the slope was, I'd have a lot of it to run off. Any other questions? Ferris, you want to make any comments? You're the one that kind of got me into to doing this. And when he told me, it didn't take long for me to understand what he was getting to, because after having that pivot there since 1992, I knew I had an issue. I just didn't know how to fix it.
Okay, so the deal with close spacing drops, if you just think about it, closer together and closer to the ground with lower pressure, you're going to get more water to the ground. That's just logic, right? And so if you take and you cut your spacing in half from 60s to 30s or from 80s to 40, your flow per nozzle just gotten cut in half, right? So you can slow that machine down because that water's not going to get away from you, because you're not going to drive that water out in front of you as fast. And the big thing that you have to look at and watch is not over applying, because you've only got a certain amount of space in your soil profile for that water. So you can't put on more than you have space to go on. So by slowing the machine down, you actually create space, and it should give you more off time. And anecdotally, the little bit of research that we've done shows 2 to 5% increase of the amount of water that you can get to the ground. But by slowing down and making fewer circles through the year, you're going to have less evaporative losses due to the amount of soil surface that gets wet and the amount of water that ends up on leaf surface that never goes in. And so bubble mode on the closer spacing works. But what happens so much of the time, and you try to do stuff, you end up working to the lowest common denominator. So if you have some 80s and some 40s on a machine, you'll end up irrigating to the 80s and the 40s won't be able to perform. So you put all the 40s on the outside of the machine where you have your higher flow rate and all your acres are at. So the best way to set up a machine is wider on the center span. So we do a lot of 90, 60, 30, or maybe IWAPs on the first span, and because there's no acres there anyway, and then 80s and then 40s as you go on out. It does a couple of things for you. One thing is it allows you to manage orifice size, and by being able to manage orifice size, you're able to manage the amount of drops that get stopped up with sand, and it helps you to manage your overwatering. So the charts can be designed to make all of that stuff fit and work. But I will tell you that this works in Arizona, it works in the Lower Rio Grande Valley, it works in Alamosa, Colorado, in the San Luis Valley, it works in the Arkansas River Valley, it works at Wichita, Kansas, works in eastern Oklahoma, western Oklahoma. Everywhere somebody tries it and tries to work with it, it works. It gives you, generally you'll see a yield increase, but you will definitely see less water wasted. And you'll definitely put more water to where the plant can use it.
One other thing I'd like to say on number 12, you know, when we first put in pivots, we usually try to go around in 3 days and try to alternate the day and the night. That's kind of our mindset and what we were told. Over the years with these moisture probes, we found out that we wasn't efficient getting that into the root zone. And I've heard Bob tell us many times to slow that pivot down. I don't know if we've slowed it down too much, but I started number 12 up this year on the 9th of July, and I shut it off on the 3rd of September, and that pivot went around 5 times and never stopped. So we were going around in about an 8-day deal. And once you get started in a program and stay in the program, I didn't really see any stress. Because you're getting it into that root zone, especially when we started having a canopy. But Bob, that may be too slow, but it's a tremendous better result than going around in 3 days and losing a lot of that water to evaporation. Any other questions? Well, once again, thank you. I invite you all to come out to the farm anytime you want to see some of these things, because us as producers, if we don't have a little research going on, if we're not seeing, we're not believing. And just like I said, until I put a soil moisture probe in the ground, I wouldn't have known that I wasn't water efficient. So anyway, thank y'all.